Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So let me paint the picture for you folks, because technology always fails us. So, Kirk Collins normally communicates with us on a microphone using Skype. Unfortunately, we couldn't get that to work, so I called him on the telephone. Kirk, you sound really good.
Well, I apologize for the technical difficulties, but here we are.
Very good. And because he doesn't use Skype at all, we have Jerry Clark on telephone.
Hi, Gene and Kurt. Nice to be here.
Hey, you know, I wanted you on because you have this amazing historical perspective, because you're the author of one of the most expensive UFO books ever to be published. The UFO Encyclopedia, which costs, I understand, about $12 million right now.
Yeah, on sale.
That's right, you know, from $15 million. You know, it's like it's like when they gave Bob Bigelow $22 million to do a UFO investigation under this Pentagon program. That was enough to buy 10 toilet seats.
Yeah, I apologize. I had nothing to do with it.
Well, we didn't blame you for it. We'll blame you for something else as we progress, but we didn't blame you for that. But I was thinking here, and I get an offhanded comment before we get into the main focus of this episode of the PowerCast something, where, okay, so the Pentagon approves this $22 million. It goes to Bob Bigelow, who rings up MUFON and asks them to help him in his investigation. So indirectly, for the time it worked, MUFON was getting funds from the Pentagon by way of Bob Bigelow to do this investigation. How does that strike you in general?
Well, it could strike me worse because I have, shall we say, an ambivalent view of MUFON and always have had. But the MUFON Department of Directions is very ably headed by a guy named Robert Powell, who lives down in Austin, Texas.
Sure.
And is an engineer, a very smart guy, and very capable investigator who has a network of other capable investigators. You know, I don't have trouble with that. My problem would be if there was something sneaky going on or something incompetent going on. But if you're going to deal with civilian ufologists, MUFON's Department of Investigation under Robert Powell is a pretty good place to start.
We've had Robert Powell on the PowerCast a couple of times, and I look forward to having him on again. So, yes, I agree with you. He certainly knows his stuff. Now, the thing that has concerned me about the new Pentagon program, and now it's a line item in the most recent military budget, is that it's like all the stuff you and I have encountered over the years, and Kurt Collins, our guest co-host, has encountered over the years in terms of UFOs, they don't seem to exist anymore. It's like we were all irrelevant.
Yes. I mean, I think that we're not irrelevant quite yet, but the end of the road is in front of us, and we can see it. This is what we're here for all along.
Well, of course, the end of the road is nigh, as we put it. But as we pass this mortal coil, they'll never remember us. We won't exist, will we?
Actually, yes, we will be remembered. Certainly the best of us will be. The most colorful of us also will be. And it's kind of like another deep interest of mine is folk music and how the study of folk music and in a larger context, folklore generally, was done by amateurs. They weren't even called folklorists until about the middle of the 19th century. Before then, they were called antiquarians, which means they thought that they were studying folk traditions that were rapidly disappearing and would never reappear. It turned out they were wrong about that. And folklore continues. It's a dynamic process. UFOs will continue. But science neglected the subject, I don't have to tell you, in an appalling way, for which some very prominent scientists of the mid-century and later will get their due in the history of science. But we were there, it's just like the early folklorists and ballad scholars. They were there to collect information that, in common consensus and elite respectable society, wasn't worth paying any attention to, wasn't worth preserving, wasn't worth trying to understand what its dynamics were. And there are all kinds of things like this that are precedents for the amateur phase of UFO study and then the professionalization of it in the early to mid years of the 21st century. You know, and people will go back and write the prehistory, and we'll be part of that prehistory, just as the early folklorists are part of the prehistory of that discipline. So, yeah, I don't worry about that. You know, in any case, I'm not in this for my ego anyway. I mean, if I were, I think my ego would have been crushed long ago.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
But the thing is here, though, we have undergone a lot of interesting things that have to relate to UFOs, about how pop culture has embraced it. And that brings us to the reasons why there's even a Pentagon investigation now. If we hadn't gone through all that we did, they wouldn't have bothered, would they?
Well, I think that whether we had existed or not, society, science, military, government would have had to deal with UFOs just because of the sightings. The central fact of the UFO phenomenon is sightings. The second central fact about the sightings is that they don't go away. You can pretend they're not there. You can ridicule them. You can invent preposterous so-called conventional explanations for them. They don't go away. And more people see them. And more people who shouldn't be interested, like astronomers and physicists, start quietly getting interested. They get curious about this. Why is this continuing? Why are there the explanations for these reports so loud? And eventually they work their way out of it. But what we did, we amateurs, we in the prehistory, we saved the history. We investigated the sightings to the best of our ability, and some of us amateurs did very good jobs investigating cases. And in fact, Dr. James McDonald, the atmospheric physicist from the University of Arizona, when he came around in the 60s, he was amazed at how good some of the investigations done by the UFO groups were. They knew what they did. They knew how to investigate a case. They knew how to document. So there are rich records there, which they will get, which those who participate in the professional stage of UFO study will find their way to and be able to make use of. Now, I have a, you know, it's kind of hard to be optimistic living in America in the 21st century for all kinds of reasons. But one thing that I am optimistic about is where this is going. It's going, it won't be smooth sailing. There'll be many bumps in the road, but it's heading in the right direction. And I think that I don't think that this phenomenon is unsolvable. It's solvable with difficulty, and it may be that we certainly need more knowledge and understanding than we currently possess. But we'll get there, and we're getting there all the time. I think, for example, one thing that's happening is that the reason you're getting these astonishing UFO videos and films and instrumented documentation is that technology on our side has gotten better.
Hey, before we go on, let's do a brief break here. We've got Jerry Clark, our guest co-host. It's Kurt Collins. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you feel America is facing more dangers than ever, you're right. An increasing number of things are falling apart daily. That's why you need to prepare for more of the unexpected, and that includes food shortages. When people panic, grocery stores run out of food fast. Would you survive without food for days, weeks, even months? The smart folks are buying emergency food now. Take this moment to shop MyPatriotSupply.com. We're America's leader in preparedness. My Patriot Supply has earned over 47,000 four-star and five-star reviews. Our delicious food kits average 2,000 calories per day and last up to 25 years in storage, so it's there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com, order a food kit or two, and we'll ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Don't wait for the news to tell you something bad happened again. Rather, be more self-reliant and prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
For over 20 years, Extendivite has been helping people. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. Glad I found this product. I am 51 years old and started getting headaches a couple of times a week. I went to the doctor and my blood pressure was a little high at around 150 over 95. I found out about Extendivite and I ordered some to try it. Immediately, I felt better and it lowered my blood pressure and my headaches went away almost instant. I have been taking it now for about 4 months, and I am so glad I found this product. You won't be disappointed. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
A lot can happen in 6 seconds. A rodeo ride, a dramatic basketball win, and the world record holder can solve a Rubik's Cube. 6 seconds is how long it takes for an 18-wheeler traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. And in those 6 seconds, that truck will travel the length of 2 football fields. So please, give them room. Never cut in front of a large truck for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We have Jerry Clark, longtime UFO investigator historian, who got his start as I did. In the, I guess in the late 50s, early 60s, we all got involved in it. We all met, as a matter of fact, through a magazine called Flying Saucers from Ray Palmer. He had a section called Saucer Club of News. And we all hung out there, and it was kind of, I guess, would that be like the Facebook, at least for UFO fans of the 50s?
A Stone Age Facebook.
A Stone Age Facebook.
That's how we heard of each other, as of course you know. And that's how we all got connected. And many of us never got out of it.
Some of us just kept at it for our entire lives, like Tim Beckley. Turned it into a full-time business. You certainly worked professionally with Fate magazine, with writing books and things like that. I did radio broadcasting, but I wrote on the side, had a magazine on the side. Now I am in real radio because this show is carried on commercial radio and as a podcast. And what am I doing? I haven't learned any better.
Yeah. Yep. I was talking with a longtime ufologist friend of mine a couple of years ago, saying, you know, I'm really thinking I'm going to be retired from ufology any time now. He just laughed uproariously, and he said, "No, you won't." He said, "It's like the CIA or the mafia. You'll never get out." And he, of course, was right.
Well, Kurt's the same way. Kurt, you've told me how many times you're laying back from UFOs, and you're back in it.
Oh, that's right. There's new information, and then plus, you know, you develop a network of friends, and you miss them. So, you know, sometimes it's the cases, sometimes it's the people, but it's hard to leave behind.
I think it's harder than ever because we're actually seeing progress in front of our eyes instead of just, you know, an endless kind of stalemate. Things are moving. And that's incredibly interesting. And you kind of want to stick around to see it through.
Well, of course, you and I, Jerry, have faced certain health issues, and we want to stay alive for this.
Yes.
You know, we want to be like someone like a Betty White who can live to 99 years old or something.
Right. Yeah, there were some guys in our field who made it to a ripe old age. Obviously, Alan Hynek, Len Stringfield. Yeah, there are some really good people. Leo Sprinkle died just recently, although he'd been inactive for a number of years, but he had a good long career. And there are others that you can mention. David Jacobs is still alive, although, as I understand it, in quite poor health.
I haven't heard, you know, from David Jacobs in years and had wondered about that. Now, of course, Jim Moseley lived till 81 years of age, and until very shortly before he died, he was very active. As a matter of fact, we had him on the show a few months before he died, and he was Jim Moseley.
Yeah, we corresponded, and I think our correspondence ended 2 weeks before he died. There are these characters. You know, there's just all kinds of people attracted to the subject. You know, they're all recognizably human, but they all have the one eccentricity, the one tick or quirk that drew them to UFOs. I met most of the people I've known in this field, even people I disagreed with, you know, about things, I liked. I thought they were nice people. They were interesting people. They thought originally. They weren't, you know, just conformists doing what everybody else does.
You know, we should talk about some of those people because as we look at what's happening in the UFO field today, we have to consider the contribution by all these people. They weren't just kids chasing after flying saucers. They develop professional careers. They develop skills as journalists, as scientists, to actually go out and investigate the things. Of all the people that you met over the years, who do you think was possibly the most interesting character?
Oh, man. I'll tell you the one person that I most liked, who I thought was just the definition of an old-fashioned gentleman, a gentleman of the old school. And that was Len Stringfield. I just loved Len, and I got to know him later in my career. I'd been reading him since I was a kid, and his newsletter, and he wrote a book or two. And Len was just a good guy. He was a guy with a great sense of humor, a basic kindness. He was just a gem. You know, he wasn't necessarily like an intellectual or anything like that, although he wasn't stupid. But he just had a manner about him that I've always remembered. Whenever I think of him fondly. And I met people, of course, who could not be described that way. Some people who were really, I think, bad human beings. But I don't think that they were any more common than bad human beings in more mainstream contexts. But just all kinds of people. Most of these people weren't out for the money. You know, there's this kind of vicious slander of people who get interested in unusual topics that they're out there for the money. Well, it doesn't take too long if you can notice anything that there isn't money in ufology. And so that's going to be disappointed. But I know people who really gave it, really tried hard to make a lot of money on UFOs, and that some of them are willing to cut corners. And but these are not the people that history will recall.
Now, with Larry Stringfield, his specialty was so-called crash retrievals.
Now, late in his career, yes.
Sure. Now, how good was his research into that? Because the only crash retrieval we hear about these days is Roswell, with all the questions about that.
Well, there are all kinds of unanswered questions about that phase of Len's career, and that began in the late 1970s, although he'd been, you know, he actually saw a Foo Fighter in 1945, so he had been there before anybody else. And he had probably the longest career of any single individual in this field. But the business with the crash saucers, and I share your skepticism of Roswell. I think that there are just too many questions about Roswell for anybody to feel too complacent about it. But there's no question that he was getting this testimony and these statements from people who apparently were who they said they were. And my impression from the outside, and I wasn't the only one, was that he really wasn't investigating these. He was collecting these statements and not asking the kinds of questions he probably should have asked. Like, how could you prove this? You know, starting with that one. And so you get these stories that are unquestionably interesting to read, but you also understand that, you know, this is just what somebody said. And there are all kinds of things we don't know about the way Len interacted with his informants.
Let's talk more in our next segment with Jerry and Gene and Kurt. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
The hostage situation at the Colleyville Synagogue is over. Governor Greg Abbott tweeted about 9:30 p.m. that all hostages are safe after a loud bang and gunfire were heard. Colleyville Police Chief Michael Miller.
Sometime around 9 p.m. today, this evening, the HRT, the hostage rescue team, breached the synagogue. They rescued the three hostages, and the subject is deceased.
FBI Special Agent Matt DeSarno.
I do not have any information right now that indicates that this is part of any kind of ongoing threat. We obviously are investigating. We'll continue to investigate the hostage taker. We'll continue to investigate his contacts. Our investigation will have global reach. We have been in contact already with multiple FBI LEGATs to include Tel Aviv and London.
This is USA Radio News. A snowstorm is blanketing the southeast and northeast with rain, snow, and ice. Up to a foot of snow has already fallen across the region, with officials warning of hazardous travel. Winter storm warnings and watches were put into effect from eastern North Dakota to northern Missouri, just ahead of the snowfall. Some people are familiar with an Alberta Clipper. This system originated in Canada as a Saskatchewan Screamer. Bridges in the Des Moines area are covered with ice, and some roads east of Des Moines are completely covered with snow. Forecasters say much of the state of Iowa can expect at least a foot of snow. Strong winds may also cause blowing and drifting snow during the storm. Officials say you need to check travelers' advisories before traveling through any of these regions. Black ice is also causing difficulties traveling around the Great Lakes and in the upper Northeast. You're listening to USA Radio News.
I'm Ben Utek. I played high school, college, and pro football, helping my team win the 2006 championship. It was an amazing day, but it can't compare to the joy I feel every day with my loving wife and three beautiful daughters. My football career ended after I suffered my fifth concussion. Did you know that over a million athletes suffer a concussion each year? That includes boys and girls, every age, every type, and level of sport. It isn't always clear that a player has had a concussion, so parents, athletes, and coaches need to learn about concussion signs and symptoms. The American Academy of Neurology recommends athletes thought to have a concussion be immediately removed from play and not returned until assessed by a healthcare professional trained in concussion. This isn't just about sports. It's about your brain. When in doubt, sit it out. Learn more at aan.com/concussion. That's aan.com/concussion. A message from the American Academy of Neurology.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
Now, in terms of Leonard Stringfield, just for people who want to know, he died from lung cancer in his 70s. And I don't know if
he died in 1992, I believe.
Yeah, I think it was 94, but we won't quibble over a couple of years.
Well, I can check on that quickly. So go ahead with what you're saying.
Okay. We don't know much about his personal life, but he was PR person for a company in private industry in his real life.
Yeah, in Cincinnati. I think he was in some kind of sales executive or something like that. And he was married to Dell for many years. He had kids. When he died, some of us who knew him hoped that we would gain access to his documents so that we could figure out what these stories were about and who was telling them. Yeah, you're right, it's 1994. And he, I think, would have been willing to share them, but Stan Friedman made a very clumsy grab for these documents while Len was literally on his deathbed. And it angered the family so badly that they just weren't interested in cooperating with anybody after that.
Now, don't want to beat someone when they're down, but after Stan died, I read some of the stuff that Kevin Randall had written, that he had pulled a few fast ones over the years to try to get priority access to data and things like that.
Yeah, Stan was, I think, had become, over the years, such a fanatical, obsessed figure that he became, in my judgment and in the judgments of many people, not reliable, not credible, not unwilling to stretch the truth or to claim something was true that couldn't be true. I have always said that he and Phil Klass were the big nemeses of each other. But it was two guys with the same personality, just different conclusions about UFOs.
So he was the positive Phil Klass, and Phil Klass was the negative Phil Klass.
And they were both fundamentally crazy, I think.
Stan Friedman was famous for not changing his mind. One of the few things he did change his mind was about his opinion on the Aztec crash, where he originally dismissed it as a fake, and then he later endorsed it, the work of the Ramses, as genuine. And I thought that was probably his worst, among his worst judgment ever.
Yeah, that and MJ-12. I think that he just, and he was really belligerent. You couldn't try to reason with him. And his standard response was, well, how many archives have you visited? How many miles have you traveled? It wasn't worth arguing with him. But I didn't pay much attention to him. And I think that he had reduced most of his followership to people whose interests in UFOs were not profound. They were more casual, or they were more, maybe you could say, gullible. And they weren't listening critically to him, so he was talking more and more animatedly and excitingly and extravagantly. And I'm not even sure that Stan, at some point, knew what he believed in him.
Well, I know that towards the end of his life, we did interview Stan, and we tried to get him off his talking points and ask him a few questions about his personal life and such. But those talking points were just rock solid. He learned those standard 10 different buzzwords, the cosmic Watergate and all the other stuff, and he never deviated from it.
No, he was just talking points is a good word. He was all talking points. It was just nuts. And I the longer that I've studied UFOs, the more complicated the question seems to me to be. And there are a number of different angles from which you can approach it. Not Stan. The older he got, the more simple it was, and the more reducible to those talking points you mentioned. Yeah, he just was, it was kind of a tragic case. And Phil Klass, who I also knew and corresponded with for 20 years, and I met several times, they had the same personality. And they were just talking points. And kind of like empty cleverness.
Was that a function of just getting old or getting tired?
Oh, well, we get old, we get tired. We know something about that, Gene.
Sure do. Remember, I resemble that remark, yes.
Yeah. You know, it's a bunch of things, but I think they always had this sort of personality in which neither of them would ever imagine that he could be wrong about something. And that's a personality trait that you can pick up pretty early on if you don't watch yourself, and many people don't watch themselves.
Now, going back just briefly, because we kind of segued from Leonard Stringfield because of Stan Friedman and his involvement, but among the various crash retrieval cases that Leonard Stringfield had accumulated, anything there worth further investigation?
I don't know. As a general principle, I have grave doubts about crash saucer stories, but I'm not so foolish as to say that they're all worthless. They're all have no foundation. I don't know that. And if we had access to these stories, and if you read these stories that Stan published in several monographs, they're fascinating reading. I mean, they're just great stories. And if the people are who Stan says they are, they don't sound like some nut job off the street, yet there is no evidence for them. So we don't know. Is he asking what crash saucers, what the evidence consists of? Consists of a bunch of stories.
The thing that bothers me about the crash retrieval is the logic of the situation. And we can just focus on that for a moment. So, for example, you have an advanced flying machine from another world. It crashes. Now, suddenly you have the wrecking crews coming over and picking it up, and you think, okay, it's crashing. Obviously, there's more than one of them. Obviously, they're communicating with one another by some radio system. And therefore, if one of them says, hey, we're in trouble, we need help, why don't they come down and take care of the situation? You never hear of any. You never hear of an effort, do you, of E.T. coming over to the crashed saucer and retrieving it, doing something to prevent the local populace from grabbing a hold of this advanced technology?
I think that's an excellent point. And as I often say when we're talking about crash disks, I don't know. Just the evidence, just, you know, there's some vaguely circumstantial evidence that's interesting, that is you know, that attracts your curiosity when you hear it, but it doesn't go anywhere. And, you know, Kevin Randall and Don Schmidt and later Tom Carey did a pretty good job investigating Roswell. I mean, they were everywhere. They interviewed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And at one point, the evidence looked really suggestive. And that was a point, like, back in the 1980s when I was willing to think, yeah, this may be real. But it just kind of fell apart. Turned out that key informants were lying. Not all of them, apparently. But some key ones were just making it up.
Now, there's a book out, by the way, we're going to break in a moment. There's a book out, by the way, called Roswell in the 21st Century that Kevin wrote a few years ago. And he kind of goes back to look over the evidence and finds that things that he thought were pretty solid were less than solid. We have the solid Jerry Clark, the solid Kurt Collins. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR. DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Hey folks, Tom D for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, ghosts, zombies, UFOs, crop circles, and more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people who seek a little more than the other dating services offer. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and you want to connect with others, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. So many people want to share their experiences with the paranormal, the afterlife, the unusual, and this is the place to meet and share common interests with those of like minds. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. That's ParanormalDate.com. Use the code word GEORGE and start meeting others. Get going now and connect with someone you like.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Kirk, before we go on, just to get your perspective, because you've followed a lot of the UFO history and folklore too, do you have any qualms about Roswell, or do you accept it as something that might be genuine?
There may have been a genuine incident. I don't think it was a saucer crash, though. And before we move too far away from Lynn Springfield, there's one interesting thing about his work that'll make you maybe take a second look. Before the Roswell story broke, Lynn Springfield had the story of a Major M and his story of recovering this pool wreckage. And then later on, it turned out that was the story of Jesse Marcel, and he just hadn't used his full name. And so, you know, that's at least one of those anonymous crash stories that had something to it. So, I don't think that there are dozens of crashed UFOs, but there's one of his stories that was actually, there was a real person that you can, track to testimony. It was a real event. So maybe some of the others are worth looking at. Well, I did want to mention one related thing about crashes, and I wonder if there's some of these are military disinformation. I've heard of two things. One is that the crash recovery of a downed Air Force plane, that the recovery team used the story of a crash saucer as an excuse and told people to stay away because it was dangerous. And, I consider that merely an anecdote. I don't know anything like that is actually documented. And the other thing that is somewhat similar, this came from, I think his rank was major at the time, but Major Friend, who was the head of Project Blue Book, he happened to be the only black soldier that was ever head of Blue Book, and he'd been a Tuskegee Airman. Anyway, he told John Alexander that they had an exercise, they being the Air Force. They would have an airman go into a dark hangar. They would turn on the lights, and there would be a saucer, and they would turn it off, and they would ask them to describe it. And it was a test of their ability to interpret and gather and accurately relay information in a surprising situation. And I don't know if that's documented, but that's a story that's told. So, Gary, do you have information about either of those, or at least an opinion on that?
Well, I've heard all those stories, but again, there are all these interesting anecdotes. Some of them pro Roswell as extraterrestrial event, and others, some secret military operations. On my opinion of Roswell can be summed up pretty quickly, and it's something happened. We still don't know what it was. It probably was an extraterrestrial spacecraft. But it's still a mystery. Roswell, I think, think is a genuine historical mystery. There's an answer somewhere in documents that are still deeply buried. But I think that probably, and I'm, again, just speculating, that this folklore about an extraterrestrial crash grew on top of, you know, this mystery, a real mystery.
You know what bothers me very interestingly about the Roswell crash is there's a general perception here at the original story about getting a flying disc is essentially the real one. Then it was covered over with the thing about, oh, it was just a balloon. But the original story, if you look at the report, says nothing about crash and wreckage, just that they got a flying disc.
Well, Kevin points out in his book, Roswell in the 21st Century, which I think is the one book, if you're going to read one book on Roswell, that's the book to read, because nobody knows more about the subject, except maybe insiders on the secret know. But Kevin's knowledge of the subject is just vast. And I think that something happened. And but as Kevin documents very well in his book, the stories of alien bodies did not show up contemporaneously. There is no contemporaneous record of people claiming to have seen alien bodies in the summer of 1947. That those stories don't start to show up until years and years and years later, in the fashion of the way folklore expands, the way legends and rumors expand. And the, you know, if you don't have bodies, a craft or wreckage, whatever you want to call it in Roswell, is just some flying machine that came down to the ground. And there's no particular reason to think it's a spacecraft.
The only reason they think it's a spacecraft is because of the later stories that emerge.
Well, I mean, there are interesting things about the story that are puzzling. For example, the metal that you could play with and it would return to its original shape. I mean, those are interesting things to listen to. And they I'm sure they have some significance. But unless you've got contemporaneous stories of alien bodies from the summer of 1947, it's just kind of hopeless to make a case for a spacecraft.
Well, that was the point I think that Kevin makes, that he couldn't nail down a reliable story about being seen in connection with that crash.
Yeah, I think that's an enormous point that Kevin made, an extremely important point to discern and write about.
So Roswell at least deserves, although it wasn't as big as people play it. You know, it was like a one-day wonder in the newspaper, but it's a significant event, has a lot of impact, and there's a mystery. But what are a few events that you think deserve at least a mention in a history of the 1940s and 50s?
Oh, I think some of the classic cases, Mantell case, the Childs Whitted case. I mean, there are a number of them. There's also, it's not very well known, but on June 24th, 1947, in the Pacific Northwest, a guy saw UFO beings standing outside a UFO. The same day of Kenneth Arnold's sighting that's got the whole thing started. And so there's a CE3 by an apparently reliable guy who was sticking by his story 40 years later that he had seen these little men outside a saucer. And he didn't know about little men. He didn't know about flying saucers because Kenneth Arnold's story had not made the press at that point. And, these things are interesting. So much of the phenomenon was already set up. It was just got noticed on June 24th, 1947. Because if you read books, there's some really interesting books on Foo Fighters. And Keith Chester's book is one of them. And Chester, although he doesn't seem to realize it himself, but he's writing about the UFO phenomenon that everybody got to know after 1947. It was already there the early part of the 1940s. And what pilots were talking about were not just these nebulous balls of light, but they were seeing cigar-shaped objects, they were seeing discs, they were seeing all kinds of things. As far as I know, there are no CE3s that have come to light. But the phenomenon was the UFO phenomenon, recognizably, in all its variety.
Now, if Kenneth Arnold hadn't existed or hadn't seen something on June 24th or had not reported it, how long would it have taken, can we even guess, for UFOs to become part of popular culture? Or was that such an outsized event that it had to happen that way?
Yeah, I think that if Arnold hadn't been there, somebody else would have. Remember, this thing starts with a wave. There's a wave in the United States, beginning in the Pacific Northwest, but spreading elsewhere, and even internationally. And so what Arnold saw was part of a wave. If it had just been an isolated sighting and Arnold hadn't been there to see it, it would have taken maybe two or three more days for the thing to catch on. But the wave was big enough that people noticed there were strange things in the sky.
Hey, we've got Jerry Clark, UFO historian, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and lots of other stuff. Kurt Collins, of course, does Blue Blurry Lines and the Saucers of Time Forgot. And Gene Steinberg does something, but we can't figure out what. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
We are GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. We've got listeners, lots of them. Around the world, around the clock, our listeners do what listeners do. They listen. And you know what listeners got? Needs. Needs for your products, your services, and money to buy those needs. With our network of over 1,000 radio stations, streaming on the web, and our satellite transmissions, we're reaching our listeners with quality conservative programming. But there's something our listeners don't have. Your offer to meet their needs. Any business needs buyers. But if our listeners don't hear your message, they're still going to buy what they need. Just not from your business. So let's fix this. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message for our GCN listeners. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email. Advertise at GCNlive.com.